We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Welcome back into Sports Talk on WWL. Mark Menard with you in for Christian Garrick along with Bobby Hebert. And this next topic got started a couple days ago when me and Bobby were standing around in the parking garage before or after one of the shows. I don't remember if it was before or after, but Bobby raised a question that I don't necessarily have the answer to. And the question was, after watching him win the French Open and his dominance here in recent years, is Novak Djokovic the best tennis player of all time?
Ever.
And I'm not equipped to answer that question, but I said, you know what? We can get somebody on the show who is equipped to answer that question. And that brings us to New York Times tennis correspondent and the author of The Master, The Brilliant Career of Roger Federer, Christopher Clary. Chris, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Mark and Bobby, good to be with you.
So, well, Chris, we'll start with Roger Federer, because you wrote a whole book about him. And to me,
he's a flat-out stud.
He's a flat-out stud. And to me, I've been watching tennis since I was a kid, and he was one of the best I've ever seen. And I think he had a claim to, you know, maybe becoming the best ever at one point. Is he still in that running, or has he been overtaken by Novak Djokovic?
You know, this is a great debate, and I got to tell you, first of all, I hate to disappoint you, but I don't think there really is a clear answer on the greatest of all time thing. I think you can start talking greatest of this era, no doubt, because you're comparing apples to apples. The problem with the all-time thing is that what are the metrics for great players today, you know? But the problem is, you look back at the old days, before 1968, when only amateurs could play the Grand Slam tournaments, you know, you could not have compiled that many victories in those tournaments. It wasn't possible for the guys anyway. And there was no real number one ranking that was clear. So the two things that matter the most in this era are the number one ranking, how long you've had it, and the number of Grand Slam singles titles, and then probably the number of tournament titles altogether. And those things are just not comparable with the old days in tennis. So the all-time thing, I got to pass on that. I just can't come up with an answer. But as far as now, you know, I got to tell you, I think all three of those guys, I think Novak Djokovic will end up being the greatest player of this era. He's very, very close right now in my book. I do think that Roger has been there at one point. I think you could argue that Rafa has been there just recently at one point. But Novak, the way he's played, he's won all the Grand Slams now twice, I think. And he's got the number one record for the weeks of number one for the men, which is an impressive record held by Federer. You know, the guy is knocking him down one by one.
Well, and, you know, Christopher, are we in football country here? And, Hebert wants to talk about tennis. I mean, I don't know, because I like a major. If you're the best of the best, I'm watching the French Open and the comeback of Djokovic. And, I mean, you're down. You're playing for 4 hours. You end up coming out on top. And then I look at, okay, what have you basically done? You know, it's always about what have you done for me lately. You can look at the whole history, but what have you done for me lately? Entering the 2011 season, Roger Federer owned 16 major championships. Rafael Nadal owned 9, but Djokovic owned 1. So when I look at that, all of a sudden, look where they're at now, basically a decade. Now, Nadal at Roland Garros increased Djokovic's lead in the series 30-28, and he leads Federer head-to-head 27-23, and I'm looking at Djokovic, the only man to beat 13-time champion Nadal twice at the French Open, and it is 3-1 against 8-time champion Federer at Wimbledon. So you just go on and on. And it's just like, okay, where are they at now? Does age come into play? Because I look at Djokovic, 34 years of age, has won 7 majors since his 30th birthday. And then and I look at the Open Era record. Nadal, who's now 35, has 6. Federer has 4. I can add that up. I mean, that's pretty impressive what Djokovic has done post 30 years of age.
Oh, it is. I think that's why he's. You can make a strong argument for him right now as the best player of this era, no doubt. And maybe even the Open Era, which is, you know, when suddenly amateurs and professionals could play together after 68. The problem is a lot of those early years after the Open Era started, like you guys remember Bjorn Borg, remember Jimmy Connors, remember those guys, they were great players.
Like Pete Sampras? Where does Pete Sampras fall into that?
For me, Novak, Roger, and Rafa are all ahead of Pete.
Okay.
They're all ahead of him because they were, I think, better multi-surface players. They've had longer careers where they've been excellent over longer periods of time. And I think they showed their versatility across a longer period than Pete ever did. Pete never got to the final of the French Open, you know, which is, an important metric for how great a player is. Well, they can play on clay, they can play on grass, they can play on hard courts. All these guys have proven they can play on everything. I think Novak is the most versatile of them all. I really do. And I think you're right. I think the numbers you cite are very good. There's no doubt he's the player of the decade. He's had a better decade than Nadal or Federer. But, I mean, a guy like Federer, you also got to take into account that, you know, he started before these guys did, and he's had to compete with them when they really at their physical peak, and he's not. So that's an issue. And he's also got 20 Grand Slam titles, and right now Novak has 19. But personally, if I had to put my hand on the fire and say who's the best player right now of these guys, I would say it's Novak.
Now,
I wrote the book.
Yeah. No. And Christopher, when I look at this, you're playing 4 hours, and you're handling adversity, and you're down 2 sets, and you check yourself, okay, how am I going to win this? I got to win 3 sets. And then if you look at his second championship at Roland Garros, 19 Grand Slam title, he's right on the cusp with Federer and Rafael Nadal, to be right there and maybe overtake them eventually. But I did not think he could come back. But explain to the fans, the casual fans, the different surfaces. You brought that up. Clay, a hard court, grass and all that. That is it the bottom line? If you could play, you could play. But it is different when you think about the success.
No, it really is. I mean, look at Nadal.
He's been awesome on clay.
The French Open, which is played on clay. Why has he won 13 titles at the French Open, which is absolutely ridiculous. Nobody's come close to that at any Grand Slam tournament in one guy. And why? It's because he grew up on the surface. He understands how to move on it. His game is like a glove fit for that sort of a surface, the way the points set up, the way the ball bounces on it, everything. He has an edge physically and practically on that surface. And so you have that, and then you have hard courts, which is the main thing everybody plays tennis on in general, especially in our country. And that's a true bounce. The ball is going to bounce precisely the way you think it's going to bounce off that kind of a court. You don't get any surprises. And then you have grass, which is Wimbledon surface.
Yes.
And you play the Newport. And that more of a traditional surface in the game. You know, the guys like Rod Laver, when they were playing and winning Grand Slams, they were doing it mostly on grass. 3 of the 4 tournaments of Grand Slams were on grass before. So that's a surface where the ball bounces lower. The bounce, unless you're playing at Wimbledon on these amazing courts, can have a lot of bad bounces.
Yep.
Tends to be tougher for guys who are kind of robotic players. You got to be more of a creative, great athlete who can adapt to thrive on that surface. So I think the 3 of those surfaces together make tennis a really interesting challenge because you got to be able to excel on all 3 to be in the greatest conversation. And all these guys, they have gotten closer together in the way they play in some ways because of the bounce of Wimbledon now is a bit higher and the grass is amazing. So the ball bounces, true. But they all have excelled in all 3. But I think Novak has been the most versatile, like I said. And I think, he's underappreciated to the general public. And I think
because he's from Serbia. We remember the genocide with, the Bosnians and all that. I mean, if he was an American, oh, my God, he'd be a billionaire. I mean, think about if Djokovic was from America. What?
No, you're right about that. I think part of the problem, though, too, is that when he arrived, the doll broke through very young.
Yeah.
So when he arrived, tennis fans had broken up into these 2 tribes. Are you pro Federer or are you pro Nadal?
Yeah. Right.
And suddenly Djokovic comes along. His game isn't quite as flashy as Federer. He's not quite as, you know, maybe appealing in some ways as Nadal.
He broke up the party.
They resent him for it. They resent him for what he's done to their guys.
No, he has a little bit neck hair that he might have to shave and stuff. So, but the one thing, Christopher, that you know, impressed me, because I love players who come back from adversity. When you think they're down, they're not down and out. Okay, I'm not watching this no more. It's over. Then you look back like, what? What the hell just happened? He eventually completed his sixth career comeback from two sets down and the second in the past week. I mean, the first man in professional era to win a major title after twice facing a 2-0 deficit in sets during a tournament. That's what I respect as a football player. I don't even know enough about tennis. I love sports. I look at that. That is handling adversity right there.
Yeah, the funny thing, you know, Bobby, is that he basically, you know, he was known as kind of a soft guy when he was young. He was not known for his resilience, even though he's come from a tough background in Serbia. But he's proven himself in the last 10 years beyond a doubt. He is the grittiest closer and the best closer in men's tennis, no doubt about it.
Talking with Christopher Clary from the New York Times and talking a little tennis here on Sports Talk. And Chris, the question I have is, you know, we kind of in America – When it comes to tennis, we want like an American star to really pique people's interest. And of course, I'm a tennis fan, and there's tennis fans. But to get the general casual viewer in there, there kind of has to be an American hook there.
Yeah,
and there hasn't been one in a while. So my question to you is: do you think it's more that there's not an American who's prominent, or do you think it's more that it's been the same three guys now for going on two decades of Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic? Do you think that is kind of, you know, impeding some of the fan base in America for tennis?
And you know, Christopher, like Mark was saying, I brought this up on the show. I mean, come on, like I said, we don't even have a top 30 candidate that's coming out of America. That you got to go back to the early 70s, whatever. I mean, to me, that's why. Come on, if any of these cats, Nadal. If you look at Djokovic, you look at Federer, if they were an American, come on, they'd be a household name, and we'd be talking more about tennis. I truly believe that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question you ask, because I kind of wonder myself. You can't say we don't have a superstar from America because we have Serena Williams. And I don't know how much.
No, I'm talking about from the male perspective.
I'm just saying that's interesting. We do have somebody people can follow at a Grand Slam. If you're following tennis, you can follow Serena.
Right.
But in terms of the men's side, there's no doubt. And when you say it goes back to the 70s, so nobody in the top 30, you got to go back to the 1870s for that.
Whoa.
That has never happened.
Whoa.
We've never had that low number of players in our history of our country on men's tennis. And it shows a couple things. I think it shows that, one, you know, the Europeans, the way their system's set up over there, they do a better job of producing great players right now than we do. And number two, I think also, you know, in terms of the quality male athlete in America, yeah, you're going to get some guys who are maybe outliers who come into tennis. But generally, if you're a top drawer men's athlete in the U.S., you're not going to gravitate to tennis. You're going to go some other direction. That wasn't always the case in all sectors of society, but I think it is now.
Right.
Doesn't mean you can't get somebody. And I think we got one guy who's coming up you guys should keep an eye on, a guy named Sebastian Korda, only 20 years old. He's a young American. He's the father of a Czech. And his sisters, you probably know, Jessica and Nelly Korda, are great women's golfers. And that's an amazing family. This kid has got a lot of talent. I think he's a future top 10 player. But is he going to be another Sampras or Agassi? That I doubt. But he could be a guy who will change the landscape somewhat. But, I mean, we're just not doing the same level of job bringing in players that the Europeans do, and or even play people like, you know, Australia at this point.
You mentioned Serena Williams, but look, we all know Serena's done amazing things for much longer than what you would normally expect from a tennis player. But even she's starting to wind down a little bit here. It's been a while since she's won a Grand Slam. Is there a woman on the American side that you would watch as an up-and-comer?
Well, for sure. There's actually – we got a bunch of young players coming out. But the one
I think
is herself to be the great talent. Yeah, exactly, Bobby. Coco Gauff. Only 17 years old, reached Wimbledon, fourth round in her first Wimbledon, first Grand Slam appearance 2 years ago at age 15. She's a great athlete, and she's a really nice personality, too. Somebody's got a lot of charisma, and she's a thoughtful person. I think she could be a superstar. got some things to clean up in her game. She's shown some signs of nerves and problems with the serve and the forehand. But, boy, I think she's improved, and she's 23 in the world at age 17. And there's no American guy who can say that. So I think she's got a chance to be a Grand Slam champion, no doubt.
And before we let you go, I got to ask you to weigh in on the Naomi Osaka saga with her pulling out of Wimbledon as well. Where do you stand on her reluctance to talk to the media, and do you think she should be required to?
Well, my understanding, Christopher said, okay, I'm not playing in Wimbledon, but I'm going to play in the Olympics.
Yeah. Look, guys, that's a long topic. We almost need another show for that one. But my feeling of it is, my sense of it is, I think the sport needs to show compassion and empathy to her. If she's got a real issue with anxiety and depression, those are not small things. I think we've come a long way as a society in terms of how we approach that. But the problem was what happened at the French Open. It really wasn't clear what was going on. People that were behind the scenes, and definitely not to us and the media on the outside, what level of distress she was in. The fact she's skipping Wimbledon, you know, she's not great on grass, like she's not great on clay. She's a great hard court player. We've been talking about the differences. So the Olympics is a better fit for her. It's going to be played on a hard court in Tokyo, and she represents Japan. But I do feel like, you know, if she's got a serious problem, then perhaps some dispensation needs to be made. But it needs to be pretty clear what's going on. And I hate to see the sport, you know, curtail access to the stars, because let's face it, it's getting harder and harder to do our job properly and to give the public a real window into reality on people. And I think it's very helpful for any sport to have that window.
Christopher Clary, we came at you with the forehand and the backhand, and you came back with nothing but winners. We appreciate the time.
Good talking tennis with you guys. We'll
all right,
again,
Christopher, sometime. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.